The Deal Lawyer Podcast with John Andrews, powered by JMW Solicitors.
Hello and welcome to the Deal Lawyer Podcast. I'm John Andrews, and today on the podcast, I'm joined by Lawrence McGinley of BDO. Lawrence, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, John. Good to be here today. Thanks for inviting me to do this.
You're welcome. So we're going to talk about the thorny subject of earnouts on M&A deals. But before we get into that, tell me a little bit about yourself, Lawrence, about your practice and what you do and where you're based.
Yeah, sure. So I've been at BDO now for just under 24 years. I'm a director in the Northern Forensic Team, and I specialise in SPA matters, so a lot of my practice is pre-deal advisory to buyers and sellers and corporate lawyers prior to completion. I advise on the accounting aspects of the transaction, and then after the deal completes, I spend quite a lot of time doing completion account reviews, earn-out account reviews, and then if the matter escalates into a dispute, get involved with things like expert determinations and breach of warranties claims. So my practice really is advising buyers and sellers across that whole range of accounts and aspects of SPAs.
Fabulous. As I mentioned earlier, what we're going to talk about today is a fairly particular area of M&A deals, and that's dealing with earnouts. And obviously, an earnout is part of the manner in which the consideration for a purchase price is calculated and paid. So, just starting with the real basics, what is an earnout?
Yes, so an earnout, really, like you said, relates to the price to be paid for the business, and it's where part of the price is deferred for a period of time after completion, and it's generally contingent on the performance of the business during that period. So earnouts are often linked to the business achieving a certain level of adjusted EBITDA or a certain level of profit over that certain period of time. And they're a really useful way of bridging a valuation gap between a buyer and a seller. So if a buyer and a seller have different expectations around the future trading potential of a business or how that should be factored into the valuation of the business, an earnout can allow the sellers to benefit by getting a higher price for that business if it achieves certain performance milestones, whilst the buyer gets some protection against overpaying for it if the business underperforms. So it helps align the sellers and the buyers' interests, basically.
Right. And I think in the past, when I've been involved in deals with an element of consideration which might be uncertain, you always seem to come up against the conundrum of do we try and fix the amount that is payable at a later date? So I guess that would be a deferred fixed consideration price. Or do we have this earnout mechanism? And it seems that what you're saying is the earnout mechanism can perhaps benefit the buyer and the seller if it's worked out properly.
It can, and I think in recent years, the way the market's been, buyers have really had to just accept or really generally accept sellers' valuations because the market's been quite strong. And as we know, the current economic uncertainty has led to that resetting a little bit. So now that the sellers and the buyers have to try and balance their interests to actually get the deal done. So it's quite a good way of just making sure that, one, the deal goes ahead, and two, that both parties try and get the best price that they can for the deal.
Great. So could you give me some examples of where an earnout might be useful in an M&A deal?
Yeah, so typically it's where the buyers and the sellers have got that different expectation of what the value of the business really is and how it's going to perform in the future. And what that does from a buyer perspective, it can allow the deal to progress where it would have otherwise stalled. So from a buyer perspective, especially if some or all of the sellers are remaining in business, it's quite a good way of retaining those key people who know the business well and try to incentivize them to continue to perform and give their all for the new owners. And again, from a seller viewpoint, it's also clearly beneficial that if the business does well and reaches those profits and those targets, that the sellers actually, that they basically obtain more money for the business than what they would have done.
Okay, and is there a sort of typical period of time over which earnouts are calculated?
There is. I mean, it's very much whatever the buyer and seller agrees. It can be 1 year, it can be 3 years. Very rarely it would go beyond 3 years. Typically, I see 1 to 3 years is the period for the earnout.
Yeah, and I've got to say that's sort of been my experience in the past of doing deals. So there's some benefits of it, clearly, of doing earnouts. What are the pitfalls?
Several pitfalls to it actually working successfully. And it's worth spending a fair bit of time getting it right before you actually sign the agreement. So in terms of pitfalls, the few that I see quite regularly is one really, parties disagreeing in the early stages of the earnout periods, especially in year one. So if there's a disagreement around the earnout calculations at the end of that year one, it can really sour relations between the parties and lead to a level of distrust between the sellers and the buyer. And that can really impact on, one, the performance of the business going forward, and two, the seller's chances of getting that earnout. Secondly, again, is earnouts can encourage short-term behaviours that aren't really beneficial for the business longer term. So sellers might opt to reduce profit margins to increase sales volumes in that earnout period. Conversely, the seller might try to manipulate the earnout calculations so that it doesn't have to pay. And again, from a practical point of view, actually absorbing a target business into a buyer group is difficult, and it can make it difficult for a like-for-like comparison to be made. So again, that's another area of common tension between the parties, because the seller's obviously interest is trying to make sure the earnout is maximised, whereas the buyer's trying to legitimately make decisions on the business that it's paid for. Another common one that we see is, I think, John, you might probably talk about this later because it's more of a legal issue than accounting, is that typically you have good and bad lever provisions in the SPA. And what I sometimes see is the buyer seeking to exercise those clauses to exclude a former one of the sellers from the business going forward, to try and reduce or avoid those earnout payments being made.
Yeah.
And finally, from an accounting point of view, it's very easy for an earnout schedule in the SPA to be quite vague and not really stand up to scrutiny, and it's not robustness when it actually comes for the schedule to be tested in practice. So it's very easy for policies to be not drafted properly and the mechanism not to be drafted properly, and it doesn't really work as the parties intended at the time of the deal, which may have been 2 or 3 years earlier.
Yeah, and I guess just to give a bit of explanation on that, when you're structuring the share purchase agreement, you will set out usually the principal considerations payable up front. You will set out a percentage or an amount or a period of time over which the earnout will be calculated. And then you'll have a schedule attached to that SPA, which will set out all of the rules and accounting principles that would apply in calculating that earnout. I think that's usually the way it goes, isn't it, Lawrence?
It is. That's exactly right. And sometimes minds are focused on just getting the transaction completed, that not enough effort and time goes into actually preparing that schedule. And from an accounting point of view, and obviously a legal point of view, if it ends up in dispute, the words that are written in that schedule are the rules and the policies and the basis that you've got to follow. So, like you say, it's really important to try and get this right and written properly in sufficient detail in the agreement.
Yeah, and I think typically when I've been doing deals, that's when I get guys like yourself involved to help with that schedule, because you've got the experience. And this is why I always say, in any transaction, as well as having a lawyer that's experienced in M&A deals, an accountant who's familiar with these types of transactions, I think is absolutely crucial. What you can't have in my view, is an accountant who's dabbled in these areas, really.
Yeah, and I think that's sometimes the difficulty, because a lot of the lawyers, obviously, that are experts in the legal wording and in drafting the agreement, but with the best will in the world, they're not accountants, and the people that are buying or selling the business, typically they won't be accountants either. So it's somebody like me tries to bridge that gap, really, and assist the lawyers and the buyer or the seller in making sure that schedule, one, makes sense, and two, protects their interests if something does go wrong further down the line. So it is that trying to bridge that gap, I think, between the legal area and the accounting area.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the more effort and time you spend on that, and, you know, it involves a bit of cost, long term, the time and cost you save in dealing with a post-completion dispute is invaluable, really. You mentioned earlier that earnouts are calculated quite often by reference to EBITDA. Could you just give a sort of fairly simple explanation of what EBITDA is and what that includes?
Yeah, so EBITDA in a nutshell means earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization. And what that measure effectively is taking typically a company's net profit and excluding those items for depreciation and amortization and tax and interest to strip out even non-related cash aspects, so things like depreciation and amortization or financing aspects. So it's what it's trying to do is effectively get to the underlying profitability of the company.
Yeah.
And in terms of that then it's a really common accounting measure. And very commonly used in transactions as a way of determining the price. So typically, you take that level of EBITDA, say 2 million, and times it by an EBITDA multiple of, say, 5 or 6 to get your enterprise value of what you think the business is worth. So it'd be 10 or 12 million in that instance.
Okay. And then when you apply that to calculating the earnout, what's the correlation? Is there some kind of percentage, multiple? How does that work typically?
It varies really deal by deal. So sometimes it can be that the earnout can simply be, you know, it's based on the company needs to achieve EBITDA of more than 2 million per year. If the company doesn't achieve that, then no earnouts payable. That's usually your floor. What that typically is as well is then there's a ceiling aspect of it as well. So anything over, say, £4 million, then the maximum earnout would be X. And it, regardless of whether you make 6 or 7 or £8 million EBITDA, typically in between then, which is more realistic, is for every pound over EBITDA within that threshold, then there would be a formula applied to calculate the actual deferred consideration and the earnout. Right. But it really does depend deal by deal and what are the key and important metrics in the target business. So for some businesses, it may not be EBITDA, it may just simply be revenue, or it could be contract value or something like that. So it's very much depending on whatever the buyer and the sellers actually agree.
Okay, so it's a really nice mechanism for giving flexibility over the price that is going to be paid for the business, essentially.
It is, and as we said earlier, it gives that potential upside to the sellers that they get more money for the business if the business performs during that period, while it also gives that protection to the buyer that if for whatever reason the business doesn't really perform as expected post-completion, then they won't end up paying the full amount of the EBITDA typically. So they achieve a lower valuation.
Yeah. Okay. And then I guess the thorny subject of tax rears its head. So probably most people will be familiar with paying tax on the consideration they receive as an upfront payment. How are earnouts taxed, and when are they taxed?
So this is again a difficult subject, but generally sellers can expect to be taxed on earnout as a capital gain. So that would typically arise at completion. So it can work a different way, though. If the earnout conditions aren't carefully drafted in the SPA, then instead of the proceeds being taxed as a capital gain, it can actually be taxed as employment income.
Yeah.
And in that instance, that can relate in higher taxes, both for the individual seller and also a higher cost for the business. So it's a really complex area, and one where usually on the deals I work on, there will be a specialist tax advisor working on it as well. So that maybe the BDO tax team or somebody else will be advising on it to make sure that the earnout, once it's actually finalised, works as the parties intended, and that if you're a seller, you don't get hit with an unforeseen sort of tax liability.
Yeah, I mean, and that could be significant, because, I mean, generally speaking, you know, we're talking about, you know, tax on a capital gain of, you know, probably hopefully 10% if we've got the entrepreneur's relief applying, as compared to 30, 40, 50% if it's taxes income.
Exactly, and that's where it's really worth spending that time before you complete the deal in trying to get it right. So basically, to avoid paying your tax at that 30, 40% of income, like you said, then really the earnout has to be carefully structured and make sure that all of the shareholders, irrespective of whether they stay in the business or not, that is the same mechanism for all of those sellers. Needs to be based on the business results rather than a personal seller's performance when they join the company, and making sure that those people that stay within the business are remunerated at market rate, to avoid any sort of suggestion that earnout is actually effectively a bonus. So it's those sorts of considerations need to be taken into account. And then, thankfully, I don't really have to get too worried about that. I'm not a tax specialist, so I can generally pass that on to somebody else.
Yeah, that's we all like to do. I've done a few of these deals over the years, actually, and one of the things is, when you're acting for the buyer and seller, is trying to build some protections into the SPA, particularly when I'm acting for the seller, you know, to make sure that the EBITDA can't be manipulated, you know, unfairly, and you're balancing the interests of the purchaser wanting to integrate, you know, his acquisition possibly into his existing business structure. The sellers are wanting to make sure they're going to maximise their sort of receipts from it. And I'm presuming that's something you've come across in deals. Certainly, a few of the things that I've thought about when I've been doing deals is, you know, you try to limit dividends going out of the business. You try to limit things like intercompany or intergroup management charges being levied. You try to put some control over the borrowing that the business can take. Ideally, if I'm acting for the seller, you try to ring fence the business itself for a sensible period of time until the earnout's been determined. But is that the sort of thing you've come across typically?
Yeah, I mean that's really where I come in advising on these things, depending on which side of the set of defence I'm working on. But from a seller viewpoint, it's very easy that if you don't pay enough attention, that a year or two down the line, and the buyer's actually preparing those earnout accounts, if you don't get things like your specific policies right and tight, like you say, then they can be manipulated. So, you know, it's very easy for example, in some circumstances, for revenue to be deferred or costs to be incurred earlier, so they're brought in with effectively the aim of depressing that EBITDA figure. So things like management charges, unless they're bona fide on an arm's length basis, usually from a seller perspective, you wouldn't want them being allowed to be included within EBITDA, because it's quite an easy adjustment to make to be manipulated. Conversely, though, from a buyer perspective, where a seller remains in the business, it's sometimes the case that they would prepare those earnout accounts, especially if they're maintaining management over that company and the buyer isn't too involved. It's really easy for that for the seller in that instance to try and potentially manipulate the figures to make sure accelerate revenue, for example, to bring it into that 12-month period, or try to defer costs into a later period. Again, it's all about human nature, really. They're trying to protect their interests and trying to make sure that they get their earn-out payment. So you've got that tension and competing interest, really, that the schedule really needs to protect the parties and be tightly drafted.
Yeah, and again, where we come back to is that the devil's in the detail, really. So if listeners to this podcast take nothing else away from it, in my view, it has to be make sure you get the right deal team on your side, really. I would say that as a lawyer, but just as importantly, it seems to me it's key to get, you know, an accountant with expertise like you have, looking at these deals in particular, making sure that the drafting is as tight as it can be. So with that in mind, Lawrence, where can people contact you if they wanted to have a conversation about the deals they're doing and how they want to structure them?
So really just contact me by email, or my email address is lawrence.mcginley@bdo.co.uk. And what I would hope is, if it is a live transaction, that legal team is potentially advising you to try and get that assistance, because it's very easy, I think, on a deal. There's generally a lot of professionals involved, and fees can be quite high. But for the sake of spending maybe a few extra £1,000, it can actually save a lot of pain and a lot of money 2 or 3 years down the line, and a lot of management time has to go into sort of rectifying these things afterwards. So I'd recommend get obviously good corporate legal team involved. That they will obviously advise you on the legal aspects, and then hopefully get a good accountant involved to advise on the accounting aspects too.
Brilliant. Well, listen, Lawrence, thanks very much for your time today and sharing your expertise.
Thanks very much, John. Thanks for having me. It's been really interesting and good to speak to you. Thank you.
Thanks very much for listening to the Deal Lawyer podcast. I'm John Andrews. If you'd like to contact me to discuss any of the contents of this podcast or any previous podcast, my telephone number is 07768 266 036, or you can contact me via email on john.andrews@jmw.co.uk. Speak to you soon.
The Deal Lawyer Podcast with John Andrews, powered by JMW Solicitors.